You're listening to Shared Security, a podcast that explores the trust you put in people and technology. Hosted by Tom Esten, Scott Wright, and Kevin Johnson. Welcome to this episode of the Shared Security Podcast. And joining me this week is co-host Kevin Johnson. And we're joined by special guest Luke Jennings, VP of R&D at Push Security, who is here to talk about SaaS attacks and to answer the question, can you compromise an organization without touching a single endpoint or network? Welcome to the show, Luke.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Great to have you. So for our listeners that don't know who you are, maybe can you give a little of your background and maybe a little bit about Push Security as well?
Sure, yeah, no problem. So, I mean, I guess I started out very much on the classic red team pen testing side of things as a consultant at a company called MWR Security Consultancy from the UK. So that was really the sort of first formative parts of my career, breaking into companies, doing the sort of standard security consultancy side. But also I did, you know, a bunch of offensive security research then too. So I'd periodically speak about that and release tools and that kind of thing. That led into kind of moving into the detection and response space. So we eventually looked at building an MDR service, and I kind of designed an EDR product that we built as part of that too. And that was really like looking back at what I used to do and saying like, what would actually have caught me all those years and trying to develop techniques in that side. So that became quite endpoint security focused, detecting endpoint compromises and lateral movement. And then now sort of chapter three really has been Push Security. Push Security, we're really focused on the SaaS security problem space. So we're kind of looking at it from the angle now of, you know, what happens if you don't have infrastructure and maybe your endpoints are really secure now and everything's just SaaS, like how do you actually attack that? How do you defend that? And so really it's that sort of new space that I've been working in on the research side. Both offensively and defensively.
Nice. Yeah. I mean, it's kind of the new world we live in, right? Where everything is SaaS based. And I think the pandemic really helped accelerate, I think, that move for most companies.
100%. Yeah. I mean, I think like for companies like ours, Push Security ourselves, like we're also a SaaS company and we use entirely other SaaS services. We don't have our own infrastructure. We're fully remote. I think, you know, new startups now, that's like the default. And I think for every other organization, they're just some way on their journey towards that. Obviously, for large organizations, they tend to still have a big internal network too. But most of the time, they're actually really hybrid SaaS companies. They've got lots of SaaS services too. That just go alongside that and they interact. And then there's the SaaS they know about and the SaaS they don't know about.
So tell us about this SaaS attack research that Push Security just recently released.
Sure. So, I mean, I guess the idea with that was I was trying to look at things from a bit of an outside perspective. So thinking about the problem space more generally, you know, stepping away from what we do as a product a little bit and just looking from an offensive perspective of, you know, what are the practical attacks in this space? Because we obviously aren't seeing them in the real world at the same level that we're seeing more traditional endpoint compromises. We have seen sort of some things in this space, but I was trying to be a bit forward looking and think, what do we need to be, you know, like, what do we need to be planning for? So really it was taking a step back and it was thinking, you know, how do you attack a SaaS native company? Like, I mean, a SaaS hybrid company too, sure, but like, let's make it harder and let's say there is no internal network at all. So like, how do you actually attack a company like that? What is the full impact of wider SaaS sprawls and not just like the real core juicy SaaS targets, but all those smaller services used by smaller teams that go out to, you know, is the kill chain, the cyber kill chain, is that similar, even if the techniques are different, or is that different too? So it was really kind of taking that kind of step back and looking at from that level and then building down. So even answering simple questions like, you know, what does lateral movement look like in this world? I normally used to think of lateral movement as moving between physical infrastructure systems, whether that's moving from an endpoint to an endpoint, or an endpoint to a server, server to server, so forth. But what does that look like in the SaaS world? So really, that's where we started from. Then I just started kind of jotting down lots of potential techniques, some of those being things that, you know, might be more familiar and quite similar to techniques in the old world, so to speak, some of them being quite SaaS specific and new, and then testing them out, just trying out a few SaaS services and things like, would these be applicable? And really, it kind of just built up organically from there until at a certain point, I kind of did a sort of MITRE style SaaS matrix mapping, kind of thought, okay, well, like, we've got all the phases here. They line up with most of the previous phases, but let's see what it looks like when you map them. And suddenly I realized I had quite a big, long list and quite a large mate. I was like, okay. And then when you started thinking about how to combine them, it started all coming together a bit more. So that's pretty much, yeah, where it came from. And then, you know, I started thinking, well, I should probably like share this, like, rather, you know, maybe just make it an open source project. I'm sure it'll be of use to other people. So I thought, yeah, get it out there. And that's really where it came from. And I was surprised that I think the number of techniques we ended up with and everything by the end, it kind of exceeded what I was expecting from the beginning. So yeah, that's kind of how it came about and where we got with it before releasing it.
I'll say that I'm always excited to see new techniques, new thought processes around this. I want to at least make it very clear how awesome it is that a commercial organization that honestly could keep this type of information, the secret sauce of their product, right, pushed it out open source. As an open source fanatic, I want to explicitly thank you for that. that is great.
Thank you. No problem. I mean, yeah, in the past, we, you know, I've benefited personally from many open source projects and, myself and, you know, my previous company, I think, you know, we got a good name for ourselves by releasing lots of work we did. So it's just organic, really. It was in our DNA to some extent to kind of be used to doing those things. So this felt like something that fit with that.
Nice. Yeah, I appreciate it. As an owner of an organization that releases as much of our stuff publicly as possible, I like to see other people doing the same thing. So
thank you. No, that's great. That's great.
Yeah. Completely agree. So maybe for our listeners, maybe you can talk about, like, what do we mean by SaaS native attacks specifically, and maybe why this is really a shift away from the traditional attack vectors that, you know, we all know and love. And like you mentioned, you know, we all kind of grew up in the industry from that traditional attack perspective. I'm interested in what your take is on that.
Sure. Yeah. So I really wanted to, at least from the first point, focus on things that didn't need to involve the endpoint, because I think endpoint compromises have obviously been kind of king for the last 10 years or so. And I'm old enough to remember the transition between that wasn't the norm and when that became the norm. And so I was trying to think about it from that perspective now of like, well, maybe that's going to cease to be normal. And so, like, although endpoint compromises could be involved in SaaS related attacks right now, I just want to kind of pretend they don't exist for now, and just focus on the things that don't touch the endpoint at all, don't rely on the internal network, just involve cloud identities and SaaS apps, pretty much. Focus on that. So that's what I was focused on when I thought about, you know, saying it's a SaaS native attack. What does it look like? Don't touch the endpoint. Keep it to the SaaS services. Keep it to the cloud identities. Both the ones the organization knows about and maybe the ones they don't know about that have spread out on, you know, in that SaaS sprawl where other users are using them. So really, that's what I started it from. So then it was, you know, it's mapping those kill chain phases. I think most of them, I use like MITRE as a good sort of stepping off point. The MITRE attack framework, sorry, as a good stepping off point for that. I think the main phase, common phase that I really don't think applies so much in this world is sort of command and control. That's a lot focused on network controls and bypassing sort of network controls and different things there. And like SaaS services and APIs and all that, they're all kind of internet accessible designed to be. So I think that's one actual phase that doesn't really apply in the same way. But most of the other phases do map to some extent. Even code execution, it gets slightly more tricky there because there aren't many SaaS services based around what we normally think of as code execution, like, you know, running code on an endpoint or running code on a server or whatever. But there are, like, with automation frameworks, like no code automation frameworks and even low code ones, they are like the new PowerShell, I think, or will be. I've actually got a blog post that will be out soon talking about a couple of those things, combining and chaining those things. So that's very much what I thought about in terms of SaaS native attacks and where I've focused it. I do think it's the dawn of a new era, if it's not already. At a certain point, people are going to be forced to be thinking about this, both from an offensive and a defensive standpoint. I think right now, endpoint compromise is still working a lot of the case. People haven't been forced to make this switch. One day, when that changes and, you know, red teams and the real bad guys suddenly can't get in that way anymore, then that's when the adaptation will happen more rapidly. The first time people are forced to do it, or it becomes, you know, it becomes easier than the old techniques.
You want your organization to be secure and compliant and to have a healthy culture, but your employees' lack of awareness makes you vulnerable to data theft, fraud, and compliance penalties. It's frustrating that the boring static training content that's being used today has failed to improve employees' ability to defend against cyber attacks. At ClickArmor, we know that without using gamification, it's extremely hard to get staff to understand how to avoid threats. Our gamified simulations and challenges have provided a 50% average improvement in thousands of employees' ability to spot phishing threats. Go to clickarmor.ca/sharedsecurity to get your free gamified phishing assessment for up to 500 employees. You'll see quickly how gamified simulations can help your team be more resilient and compliant and help avoid costly ransomware and fraud incidents. Let ClickArmor help you go from being an underappreciated, stressed out fall guy to being an innovative leader who's the catalyst for greater productivity in your organization.
I think speaking of blog posts, there's a great blog that you all released on basically giving an example of one of these types of attacks, SAML jacking a poison tenant. Can you talk a little bit about kind of that example and how that relates to kind of a modern day attack?
Sure. Yeah. So once I released the framework and there was a lot of attention, I thought it would be good to maybe put some blog posts going into more detail about chaining a few things together to start talking about practical attack chains. I picked that one because it was two attack techniques that I think are quite new to they're not like analogies to older ones or slight adaptations. They're relatively new in my opinion. So if I briefly say what each one is and then why they're quite powerful when you combine them, it'll probably make sense. So if I talk about a poison tenant, the idea we had then was, what happens if you get someone using a SaaS tenant you control? So the SaaS application is like completely legitimate, but obviously, but you as an attacker control potentially at admin level the tenant, and you've got target users using it. Like, is it realistic to get people using it? And what does that mean if you do? Now, obviously, like, I would love to be able to, as a red teamer, just convince an organization to start using a Slack tenant I've set up for them and then have full, like, control over that. But that's probably much less realistic. But if you talk about smaller SaaS apps that maybe certain smaller teams might be interested in, I think there's a lot more scope for social engineering. Maybe a new app that a marketing team wants to use for sort of SEO or something, or a new wiki tool. A lot of these apps, they have the ability to just invite users. So you can often, you know, you can set up a tenant. Often you can just call it what you like. You don't even always have to have a unique name. It's just a display name. So you just name it up to the company. Then you can just invite users. And often that means that SaaS vendor will then be emailing the users on your behalf. You're not sending phishing emails at that point. It would be like, you've been invited to join Luke's team on whatever company. And if you can get people in there and you pay for the tenant or whatever, and it just builds organically, then you've got them using it. I think the difficulty is, even if you get that to happen, it's how many users do you do it with? And is that type of SaaS application useful to you? It might not be. Like, so I guess one of the things we were thinking about was, like, is that a threat even for not particularly sensitive SaaS applications? I mean, going down as much as like a GIF generator or something might be the lowest of the low. So, you know, is that an issue? And I think that's where we looked at combining it with SAML jacking. So to briefly talk about what sample jacking is, that's a case of misusing a good security tool. So something people see as good practice for having lots of SaaS applications is to try to get them to all use SSO rather than people have local accounts with different passwords and lack of MFA and so forth on all these different SaaS applications, that if you know about them, you try and convince them to use, or try and get the IT to set up SSO and talk to your well-audited identity provider at that point that's all MFA'd and everything and nice password policies. Obviously, that's a good thing. SAML is a classic way of configuring that. But what I realized is that for a lot of SaaS applications that do support that, you can set up a tenant of your own, sometimes even a free one, and you can configure the login process to direct you to a URL of your choice. And then that means that literally at the login page of a valid like SSL site, you know, like nice certificate, TLS certificate for a valid SaaS provider, that under certain circumstances, it will redirect at the login stage to your URL. And I thought, okay, that's not a stage where people are expecting to get phished. Like, if they've already verified the first bit is okay, the link's okay, they go to the login page, there's nothing weird in the URL. It's not even like you've had to put a malicious URL in a URL parameter to do a URL direct or something. And then it redirects you to, when you're expecting to have to do SSO sign-in, it redirects you to a fake Google page or something. Like, even paranoid security people could fall for that, right? So that's what I realized was really interesting with sample jacking, was that I was like, hey, there's like providers out here where I can just tell them to redirect at the login page anywhere I liked. And then I think that this attack chain was when I started thinking, well, actually, if you put those two things together, that starts getting pretty interesting too, because rather than have to even send out, okay, a legit link that then SAML jacks you, but having to try to do some type of phishing with someone with it, if you get someone using a poison tenant, even a completely non-sensitive thing, you've got some people using it, signed up, and then later you enable SSO, enable the SAML settings and configure your malicious one, you don't even have to send an email at that point. Once their session expires, and they go back to their tab and it's like logged out, oh, and they click login again, and it just immediately takes them to your phishing page. Like, no one's thinking about getting phished at that point. Maybe there's a 0.01% of people that are, but I mean, I'm not thinking of getting phished at that point. So that was an interesting attack chain. And I thought this is a good one as a first one to talk about, because it's two quite new things that don't have a good analogy in the old world. So they're interesting for being quite new anyway, but then actually you put them together and it makes quite an interesting chain. So that's the first one. Say I've got a second one probably in the next week or two out on shadow workflows. We'll see how they go down too. But yeah, that was the first one I put out, and I just thought it'd be an interesting example.
And kind of speaking of, you mentioned the SaaS attack matrix that Push released. Can you talk about why this is important, whether you're on the red team or the blue team side, why it's important to start leveraging that?
Yeah, sure. So, I mean, I think obviously producing it in the first place was a discovery phase for me and Push as much as anyone else. But now we've got it there. I think if you're in a position where, you know, you're a red team, but you haven't really delved into this space too much yet, but it's starting to come up for you, or you're a blue team and you've got your sort of endpoint security down and all the things you're expected of doing now, and you're starting to think what the new attacks are, it just gives you a good starting off point. You know, it's that high level picture you can go to. If you're a red team, you can look at it and say, okay, like if I've got a new engagement, whether it's an internal red team against your own company or, you know, as a consultant, you've got a bunch of places to give you ideas to start from. And a similar thing for a blue team, you can look at that and think, you know, what are these things might we be vulnerable to? It gives you a starting off point. So I think really there wasn't that much information in this space out there before. This is still quite early. So I think it's put a position where it helps people get started. So I'm hoping it's going to be quite useful to red teams and blue teams for that. And obviously it's going to evolve into future. This was the first version, and other people, I'm sure, as this whole space starts to probably explode in the next year or two, I'm sure there'll be many other great security researchers adding to this message as that goes on. But at this point, I think it's a good starting off point for getting looking into this space.
Yeah, I completely agree. And that's one of the reasons, you know, I definitely wanted you all on the show is because I think this is something that isn't really talked a lot about in the community right now. And I really feel it needs to be. So thank you again for sharing your research with the rest of the community. I think it's really important, especially in this new world we live in, right? Everything is SaaS based. There's SaaS apps for everything that we do today. So I think it's really important that more research like this starts coming out.
Definitely. Yeah, I think it's the SaaS you know about and the SaaS you don't.
Well, Luke, it has been a pleasure having you on the show. So how can our listeners find out more about you and Push Security?
Sure. I mean, so obviously the blog post I mentioned will be on our website. That's pushsecurity.com. So we'll be regularly pushing content there and obviously other information about our products there too. Otherwise, I would say follow us on LinkedIn or Twitter, and X. We publish a lot of things about research there too. For my own personal Twitter, I normally put things in place for the research that I'm putting out. That would be one search run in the GitHub repo itself. Just star that or follow it if you want to see updates specifically there. I'm trying to keep that as up to date as possible.
Awesome. All right. Well, Luke, it's been a pleasure having you on the show. And thanks again.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for watching or listening to this episode. Please subscribe wherever you like to listen to podcasts and visit us at sharedsecurity.net or on X, formerly known as Twitter, at SharedSec. If you'd like to help support the podcast and get early access to new episodes with no ads, plus many more exclusive benefits, become an official supporter of the podcast for only $5 a month. Visit sharedsecurity.net/supporter for more details.